Welcome to Austin on the Air, candid conversations about air filtration and air quality and the impact it has on children and adults at school, work, and home. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Austin on the Air. Today, Anna and I are here with Michael Madonia, and he is a staff therapist at Gannon University in Erie, Pennsylvania. Today we are continuing our series on mental health, and today specifically we're going to be talking about mental health on college campuses and how important that is today. So maybe just to start, Michael, if you want to maybe give us a little bit of information about you, your history, and your journey to this point.
Lovely. Well, thank you for inviting me to join you today. It's really a pleasure. I was very happy when Anna contacted me, and I thought, well, this could be fun to reconnect. So I've worked in the field for 43 years. I've been a therapist for 37 of those 43 years. My background, my training is a licensed clinical social worker, have been here at Gannon for the past two.
Okay. Have you always worked in the college setting, or were you at different?
First 15 years of my career were at the University of Pittsburgh, largely with adolescents and young adults. So most of my career has been working with adolescents and young adults in various settings. Okay. At the University of Pittsburgh, I actually worked at the medical school for a while, and at a variety of other colleges along the way before I came here to Gannon.
You're no stranger to this topic.
No stranger to this topic, not at all.
Well, I'm super glad that you're here today. I do, you know, you had mentioned that when Anna asked you to come on, Anna is the content producer at Austin currently. And maybe Anna, if you want to just give some backstory on how you met Michael and the history there.
So I first met Michael through Active Minds, which is an awareness and activism mental health related group. We met through Gannon University's chapter. At the time, I was the editor of the school newspaper. I ran its podcast. I did student government. I did the honors program, the radio station. I was in a service sorority. So joining Active Minds was kind of a natural fit for me. Clearly, I was and still am passionate about public awareness, especially as a journalism major. So Active Minds was just kind of a natural fit, especially after seeing the state of student mental health on Gannon's campus and everywhere, really.
Okay, awesome. So Michael, she mentioned Active Minds. Maybe you could give us a little bit of background information on that organization and that program. You guys have it here at Gannon. Mm-hmm. Is this a national thing? Was this a chapter of mm-hmm. that? How did that work?
So Active Minds is a national organization. Gannon has a chapter. It's run much like a club on campus. Okay. With the leadership board, which Anna was part of. And as I understand it, there are 400 some chapters across the country.
So it's not small.
Not small. Yeah. I was at another university in town. There was a chapter there that I worked with. Okay. And as I understand it, as I was mentioning earlier, there's businesses can actually have chapters as well. The purpose of Active Minds is to raise awareness, educate the public, and specifically to address the stigma associated with mental health and getting mental health care to reduce the stigma.
Okay.
That's changed quite a bit over the course of my career, stigma around getting help, but there's still work to be done when it comes to that.
So basically like a student advocacy mm-hmm. group. So if there are schools or people that are looking to start an Active Minds chapter at their university, do you know how they would do that?
It's as simple as reaching out to the national organization, activeminds.org. As I understand it, would get you to the place that
you
need to be.
Okay. So Anna, maybe if you could tell us a little bit about, you know, like what prompted you to join that group. Maybe, you know, talk to me about like the culture at that time and kind of where you were at and, you know, the things that kind of led to that joining of Active Minds.
So like I said, Active Minds just kind of seemed like a natural fit for me, especially with how concerned I was for public awareness and advocacy, whatever medium that may have been through. You know, like I said, I was a journalism major, so that's kind of just what I did. But it was more so just seeing my peers, and especially, you know, because this was in the heat of COVID. And so poor mental health was just absolutely rampant among college students. And, you know, we were all wearing masks, but everything that I could see among my peers was just eyes that looked absolutely defeated when you were walking around campus. And so it was kind of that that prompted me to join.
Okay, so that it was COVID primarily that that maybe sparked that. So that brings up a good point. You know, a question for you, Michael. You know, in your previous roles, you know, comparatively, did you see in your profession like an uptick in issues regarding mental health in this setting, college campuses, and how did that play out?
The simple answer is absolutely. The number of students coming for help, and not just the number, but the severity of the symptoms that students bring with them when they do come for help has dramatically increased. Part of how the university has responded is to, you know, to add staff and to add telehealth resources for students, and yet it's still a challenge to meet all of the need. The sort of one of the prevailing statistics is that, you know, the generally speaking 16 to 26 age group is a high risk group for mental health concerns anyway. 75% of mental health problems emerge before the age of 24. So this is a high risk time for young people. Suicide is the second leading cause of death, generally speaking, for this age group. So it's a high risk time anyways. And then if you add on the impact of COVID, especially the issues of isolation that we've all experienced, it has really magnified the problem.
So isolation being one of the key components to the uptick, probably.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yesterday, the day before, the Surgeon General released, I don't know if you saw the report, mm-hmm. released a report that isolation was, now considered a public health concern as a result of COVID, with a lot of details about not just the mental health risks, but also the increased health risks that go along with isolation. Mm-hmm. We're not built to be alone.
No.
And especially young people have suffered because of the impacts of isolation.
Did you see any changes among staff or peers, or was it primarily?
I think we were.
The stress factor
I think we were all subject to it. But the simple answer is yes. I think we all struggled with to one degree or another.
Who didn't during COVID, basically?
Who didn't?
Yeah. So then Active Minds on campus is something that I imagine is super beneficial to help address the need that has since come about since COVID-19.
Clearly, part of what Active Minds has done is put out the message to students: this is an okay thing to do, to come and get help, to ask for help. And I think it's part of the reason that we've seen an uptick
in the number of people coming to Active Minds,
coming into Active Minds, showing an interest in the topic, coming to counseling. So you know. Part of the uptick that we've experienced, if you think about sort of the timing of things, mm-hmm. Many of our freshmen and sophomores were high schoolers when we all experienced kind of the COVID shutdown. And so those young people who went through COVID as
in
younger
high school,
people in high school are now entering college. And in some ways, I would call it a COVID disadvantage coming into university experience, the university experience.
It's almost like a residual type of impact that they're
exactly
they had it then, but it's still
a residual vulnerability.
Yeah.
More and more high school students are seeking out mental health services also, and so more people are coming to college having had a therapist and wanting to continue
that.
To do that.
Yeah.
So if you think of it as sort of occurring on a timeline, you know, the wave of need is here.
So that's a great point. And these are all things that I had been experiencing myself being a college student. You know, aside from all of the notoriously present things that play into mental health about the college setting, whether it's substance abuse, bullying, fear of the future, all of these things kind of combined with COVID and that fear of whether you're going to bring it home to your parents or whether you're ever going to be able to live a normal life again or have a normal college experience again. Like those things all kind of spearheaded into a breaking point for a lot of us, I feel like. And so that's kind of why I felt like I wanted to get more involved in Active Minds. So I started out as the General Assembly liaison, so my role was to kind of check in with the General Assembly, see what things they needed, what events they wanted to have, issues that they felt were important both in our world and on campus, and bring those to the executive board for discussion. And so doing that for a while, I moved up and I eventually became president of Gannon's chapter, and I was one of the main voices for activism in our group and on campus.
So clearly Active Minds then helped you kind of navigate that time period then when you were going through that. It was something that you could kind of throw yourself into, something positive. What do you, you know, advise for people on campus who maybe their campus doesn't have a chapter, but they'd like to start one? You know, who do they go to see, or what would you, how would you advise them?
So my biggest advice would be don't be afraid to advocate for the things that you need. There's nothing more important than your physical and mental well-being. And so even if your campus doesn't already have a pre-existing chapter, I think if you feel that there's a need, that's definitely something that's really important to advocate for.
You know, one thing I might add is that students' counseling centers can be a great resource. Certainly, if they study psychology or social work or something of the sort, there's often faculty that are a point person to help students start an Active Minds chapter. One of the healthiest ways to, you know, address a struggle is to try to build something positive out of it, and there are many ways to do that. Anna's quite modest, you know. I was a fan of her writing for the school newspaper, and she wrote a number of articles about the state of mental health on campus, how students were struggling, and things that they could do. So, from a distance, I thought this is a young woman who is trying to take a problem and create something with that struggle. And I really, as I said, I was a fan, and I applaud her for doing that because I think it really contributed to the well-being of the campus.
So kind of jumping off that, faculty, staff, administration, as a student, those are all resources that are there for you. And so if you're feeling like you're lacking something that you don't have, or there's a lack of support, or if you're seeing a need for increased mental well-being on campus, those resources are all there for you. And so it's important that you take advantage of them in advocating for what you need.
So I wanted to kind of switch gears a little bit and talk about something that we talk a lot about. You know, there's so many different things that impact mental health, right? I mean, obviously we know that there's certain traumas and there's life experiences, but there's also a lot of environmental impacts. That's something that we preach all the time being in our industry. But there's a lot of data and a lot of research out there, you know, that talks about how certain environmental pollutants, these chemicals and things that are in the air, you know, they do, they have an elevator to the brain, right? So they do impact how we feel and how we live. So Anna, maybe if you want to just talk to me a little bit about, you know, the various environmental factors that you saw. I mean, when you were on campus, or you know a lot of people that are on different campuses, you know, what would you say are the top pollutants that are probably around in college campuses, whether it's a dorm or a classroom or walking to back to your dorm or even off-campus housing? How does that play a role in mental health? What are some things that you've seen over the course of the years?
So when I started college, I started out in a pretty new dorm building, which wasn't so bad, but we know that with new buildings, they have their own sets of problems. So new building materials, carpets, drywall, all these things, they're off-gassing all these chemicals, formaldehydes, different types of things. I had many friends who attended other campuses when I was that age that I would go to visit, and many of their buildings weren't new. And those buildings have their own sets of problems as well, whether it's mold or a weird smell or water damage. You also have to take into account whether your campus is urban or rural. You know, attending an urban campus, there's constant traffic emissions, construction emissions, all these things that can be really harmful to you. And when I eventually moved into off-campus housing, that really wasn't any better. You know, I had an apartment that was infested with mold. I had water damage. I actually had a fire in my kitchen that wasn't addressed properly. So there's all those kinds of factors that kind of make it difficult for college students to have a really healthy experience with their living space.
Brings up a good point. You know, off-campus housing, a lot of students choose to go that route, and that's not always, you know, you might have a landlord that either is uneducated about indoor air quality or maybe just is trying to cut costs, and so things aren't properly remediated the right way. So, but there's also, I think, I mean, airborne pollutants that are probably brought in from college students. I mean, there's probably, you know, the smoking in the dorms and the, you know, all the different things, whether it's cleaners even or perfumes, or there's things that like people do in indoor spaces that probably are also contributing to poor indoor air quality. And these are even more serious for kids, students who have pre-existing conditions, asthma, allergies, maybe even long haul COVID, they have breathing issues. And so did you see that a lot on campus? Did you know students that had difficulties or?
So I had many friends from other campuses who struggled with pre-existing health conditions, and it didn't make things better, you know, if they were in an urban campus, maybe they were in a wildfire zone, maybe they go to school near a chemical incident. So all those things compounded are really difficult for any person, but they were especially difficult for these friends that I had. And then jumping back to, you know, those harsh cleaners or things that we bring in, especially during COVID, we use so many cleaners, whether it's in our dorms, in the classrooms. Like, I remember we used to joke about these cleaners because they were so strong, they smelled like eggs. And it used to make my head hurt during class and I couldn't focus. And so that's another layer that's really harmful as well.
So we have, you know, that's something that we talk a lot about in our industry because, you know, we manufacture portable, you know, medical grade HEPA and carbon air purifiers that can, you know, take a lot of these things that we're talking about out of the air. And we know that one of the biggest, most problematic ones over the last several years was, you know, obviously we have a ton of cleaners, like you said, Anna. But the reason we had those cleaners in such abundance was because of, you know, trying to mitigate viral transmission. And that is one thing that, you know, we talk about with our air purifiers, being able to also capture even the viruses, you know, down to the 0.1 micron. So, you know, knowing that that is something that's available for people, whether it be students in dorm rooms or professors in classrooms, just things that we could install around campus. Do you find that, you know, maybe this could be something that helps the mental health situation, like going forward, so that we do have an
option nowadays, you know, to kind of look at things a little differently and try and keep life moving.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you asked the question, because one of the things that the leadership at the Counseling Center did, a number of months ago, was to give everyone air filters for their offices, you know, filtering systems. We have filtering systems in the hallways now. You know the science of it better than I do. What I know is, and this is sort of a foundation kind of philosophy from my training from the very beginning, is that we take a biopsychosocial approach, and we're talking about the biology of our life, and that certainly has an impact on our mental health. So anything that we can do to raise the overall health yeah. of our environment, there's an old expression that I like, that a fish is as healthy as the water that it swims in. We're as healthy as the air we breathe. Exactly. And I think, as I said, you know the science. Mm-hmm. If the science is that it improves our health, I know that anxiety is the primary reason that people come in to counseling here. In our counseling center, that's typical across the country. So anything that's going to reduce our anxiety quotient, including the quality of our air, yeah. I think is absolutely a right thing to do.
And it seems, I mean, on some levels, it just seems basic, right? Foundational, like it's the air that we breathe. It's the thing that we consume most of throughout the day. Maybe start there, right? You know, I mean, and I'm thinking there's so many things between carpets, building materials, paint, whatever we're doing in the room, in the space that we're in. But, you know, gosh, if we could just also mitigate the transmission of the disease that has caused so much havoc over the last few years, I feel like maybe that's something that we should all start looking at.
Absolutely.
You know? Yeah, for sure. That's probably, I mean, in hindsight, looking back when you were in school and there were, you know, going through the pandemic, that's probably something that probably could have helped your class. Right. I mean,
so COVID and all the harsh restrictions that came with it definitely did something to student mental health, whether it was students being afraid of never having a normal life again, or students being worried that they're going to take it home to their families. It definitely was really problematic. And, you know, like Michael said, as human beings, we're not meant to live alone. And there were so many issues that came from that. And so I think that any step that we can take to mitigate COVID so no one ever has to feel like that again because of it is a good thing.
My last question, I guess, for you, Michael, would be, you know, if there's professors listening, or maybe even other counselors, and they're seeing an uptick, even whether it's the classrooms or their counseling centers, you know, with students that are having real issues, what's your, I guess, advice for them?
At least two, maybe three pieces of advice. One is to not hesitate to approach your students if you're worried. And not as a professional, you know. Math professors don't need to be psychotherapists any more than you'd want me to be a math professor. But to approach your students if you're concerned, refer them for help. Know what your resources are on campus. To the extent that you're interested, there's lots of training available for staff and faculty on college campuses to learn more about mental health and mental health issues. Our counseling center this academic year received a large grant. Part of it is to train, one goal is to train every faculty and staff on campus in how to engage with students who are distressed. And so your university may be a resource to learn more.
So same kind of question, Anna. You know, if there's students that are, you know, recognizing that there's a need, maybe that with themselves or even among their peers or friends, what's some advice that you could give them? I know you Michael had mentioned that you, you know, you used your own platform at the time to, you know, kind of raise awareness in your own way. You know, what if there's students that are like, okay, well, I'm not the editor for the school newspaper and I don't have that kind of platform, you know, what are some things that they can do in their own circles?
So I'll start by reiterating, don't be afraid to advocate for yourself. Don't be afraid to go seek help. There's nothing wrong with it. It's not a shameful thing. Again, using the resources that are there for you on your campus, whether it's faculty, staff, counselors, administration, they're all there for you. So as a student, when you're on a college campus, the school is kind of acting as your guardian. They're kind of acting as your caretaker, and they're responsible for you. And so it's a good thing to go to those resources that you have. Colleges should be role models for the students that they have under their care. They should be showing them that transformation is possible, and that all starts with transforming the environment that everybody that's on the campus inhabits, whether it's the administration, staff, faculty, students. They're all sharing that environment. And so I think transformation starts with that.
That's perfect. Absolutely. I agree 100% with that, for sure. I think we had a lot of really good conversation here, a lot of good information. Was there anything else that I didn't ask that you really feel we should let people know about?
The only other thing I might add is that if someone is acutely distressed, you know, is in a really bad way now, that there's help immediately. And the quickest way probably to access that is through calling 988, which is a relatively new alternative to calling 911. It's a, you know, a mental health emergency helpline that's available across 988 across the country. And that number, if you don't know your local resources, that number will help you get connected to a crisis center in your area.
Perfect. Well, I thank you both for coming on. Thank you for the work that you guys both have done in this community over the years and for sharing your story. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Austin on the Air. For more information on air filtration, air quality, and respiratory health, visit austinair.com.